This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise. What do the Great Lakes of Michigan and the rainforests of Costa Rica share besides a common longitude? We answer that question this week on Sea Change Radio. Each of these places is home to an environmental evangelist who is helping to connect his community to a sustainable future. This week on Sea Change Radio, we begin by talking to Ryan King, a biologist, independent journalist, and, quote, ecopreneur in Costa Rica who has brought biodiesel, biochar, and environmental projects to remote parts of the country. Next, we speak to Norman Christopher, Grand Valley State University's Sustainability Director, who's helping to transform the industrial city of Grand Rapids, Michigan, into a cutting-edge, environmentally progressive urban center in the face of tough economic times. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Ryan King. He is a biologist, independent journalist, and community ecopreneur in Costa Rica. He has a master's in microbial ecology, and he's expanding biodiesel, biochar, environmental projects through eco hotels and sustainability projects. Ryan, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
Ryan, we met through a post that you made on the Oil Drum, called Biodiesel, Biochar, and Biodiversity in Costa Rica, an example of small-scale, locally appropriate action. And I will put links on our site at seachangeradio.com for people to check it out and learn a little bit more for themselves. So why don't you tell us, Ryan, a little bit about your biodiversity programs in that you're working on, including your biodiesel and your biochar. Why don't you tell us what biochar is first?
Biochar is really, it's something that's existed for thousands of years and been done in the Amazon and Brazilian regions by indigenous people over 2,000 years ago. It's basically just converting biomass, which is plant material, dry leaves, sticks, wood, anything that falls on the ground, basically, that's plant. You can use, James Lovelock suggests using agricultural waste like rice husks for biochar, but it converts it into charcoal, which is a stable carbon form. So instead of letting, so let's say we plant a bunch of trees and people think, oh, that's going to offset a certain amount of carbon dioxide. That's not necessarily true, because in the normal life cycle of the tree falls over after however many years, depending on what type it is. Usually in the tropics, there's a high amount of disturbance, so the trees don't last more than 200 years. The trees fall down, and through microbial decomposition, 99.9% of their carbon's re-released to the active cycling. It goes back up into the atmosphere and stays in active cycling. Biochar locks in the carbon dioxide, not all of it, but it locks in a fraction of the carbon dioxide into a stable carbon form. In addition to that, the other main big benefits, which we really appreciate, are that biochar helps hang on to organic nutrients. It helps with amending the soils here. So once the soil has been denuded, has been the organic layer, and the forest has been removed, it weathers very fast. So the tropical soils are oxisols. They're very bad without the input of more plant material. The biochar also I really liked because it's scalable. Anyone can do it. We use simple setups. We're looking at more efficient processors that reburn the excess gases that are produced. It's basically, the process is called pyrolysis. It's burning a combustion of plant matter, of biomass, under low air conditions, low oxygen conditions, and a temperature of about 300 to 500 Celsius. We use simple burn barrels and are experimenting with a couple different businesses, setting up little plots to compare our gardens. You know, we want to see, we've seen online a lot of evidence that with biochar, the plants do grow much better and much faster, and you get a higher yield. But we like to do that here anyway and show off that it does work and make sure that it does work. So the Flutterby House right now and I are working together, as well as Rancher DeAndre, to do different plots and experiment with our plants.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the biodiesel production that you have going on there in Costa Rica, Ryan?
Well, right now we are producing small amounts of biodiesel at Rancho DeAndre using methanol as a catalyst, which is an industrial chemical. So we have to buy that, and there's another option which I'd like to experiment with, which would be making ethanol and then distilling it and drying it, which is a little bit more difficult chemical process to produce the biodiesel.
The crimes committed day by day, no one tried to stop it in any way. All the peacemakers turn war officers. Hear what I
Has the grassroots movement in Costa Rica helped to stimulate some more greening, so to speak, of the Costa Rican regulations and their government, or has it been in spite of the government?
It's generally in spite of the government. The examples I think of, the hydroelectric dam built on Rio Peñas Blancas, which was kind of, from my understanding, from the people, the locals I interviewed there, informed me that the hydro dam was installed illegally without permission. It destroyed the river, and I've seen that firsthand. But it was a large amount of business mixing with government to influence the will of the businesses that want to sell more power. People aren't necessarily going to be using that power locally. It'll be sent other places and sold. But they really did a ton of damage in Poco Sol, the area where that dam went up. Generally, it's the grassroots movements and the locals trying to protect stuff here. The government and the industries and the development projects seem to be really butting heads with conservationists. The other examples I can think of that come right to the top of my head, China has been buying in very largely into Costa Rica, and this should open, they apparently will open up more fishing rights for the Chinese. Also gold mining in the Osa Peninsula, a very fragile, important biodiverse area, is already happening right now, and they're looking at expanding gold. Since the economic crisis, gold has gone up over 1,000 an ounce, and that's driven more people to invest. So to open up the protection rights, the government has been willing, it seems, in a lot of instances, to allow that to happen so that they can have deals and make money. So it's unfortunate, but it's also being fought very, very strongly by groups like Friends of the OSA and local conservation groups. So the conservation that's happening here is more of the much more successful efforts are going on by private reserves and locals. And I think that's also the future, just in general, wherever we are in the world, that it'll be locals and conservationists. Government doesn't have typically the environmental ethic in mind. The particular business I'm working at right now, Rancho DeAndre, the Madison family, was actually from California and worked with the Friends, actually helped found the Friends of the Sea Otter. His grandfather was involved with founding the Friends of the Sea Otter in California and protecting sea otters there. The family was interested in surfing and bought a pasture, a cow pasture here, and it's turned into an amazing secondary forest. So they let it reforest naturally and protected about 100 acres of forest. And then Andrew Madison now is the owner, and I've been working with him to bring in biochar and biodiesel projects here.
Let's talk a little bit about the logistics of what you do and talk about cities, because you're a little bit off the grid, so to speak. And so you're able to do some things that somebody who lived in a more paved area might not be able to do. Why don't you talk about first some of the day-to-day things that you're working on, and then let's contrast that with if you moved back to Denver or New Orleans, how you might be able to incorporate some of these lessons and into your daily routine and continue to be ecologically conscious.
The biochar, actually, that would be more easily spread in other areas. I would do that immediately. I actually recently taught a couple activists from Colorado who are returning to the Denver area how to do some of the biochar. Would like to go back and do it with them. Again, you need a backyard. You need a little bit of space. Apartment buildings in dense cities, it's definitely hard to do biochar and biodiesel unless you have a warehouse space or a small garage space, a backyard space. But you can still incorporate the idea of buying your produce locally and growing some of your own food, and also just reducing consumption. Riding bicycles. I love riding. I've ridden my bike all across the country. I love riding bikes. When I get back to the States, I tend to use a bicycle more often than a car. So I think these are some changes that we can take wherever we go that help out slightly. So
every little bit counts, and sounds like you're doing more than a little bit. Well, we appreciate the good work you're doing down in Costa Rica. Ryan King, thank you so much for being our guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
To read more by Ryan King about his work in Costa Rica, go to seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com.
Amém, você que fechou a porta. Amém, e não deu beijo na boca. Amém, atura minha canhota. Se liga no passo que ela vem e te entorta. Amém, não adianta ficar me olhando. Amém, não há mais quem se importa. Amém, segura a onda malandro. Você que se engana pensando estar me enganando, pra mim está tudo bem. Você vai ou quer que eu fique? Para safaget sire. Pra mim tá tudo bem.
You're listening to Sea Change Radio. This is Alex Wise. Please subscribe to our podcast if you have a chance. You can go to iTunes and type in Sea Change Radio, or you can also follow the link from our website at seachangeradio.com. Our next guest on Sea Change Radio is Norman Christopher. He's a professor of sustainability and development at Grand Valley State University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's also the founder of the Community Sustainability Partnership in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Norman, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thank you very much for having me.
First, tell us a little bit about the history of the Community Sustainability Partnership and some of the things that's setting Grand Rapids apart in terms of the sustainability field.
The Community Sustainability Partnership was an interesting concept that was formed back in 2005 by the mayor, who is still our mayor, Mayor George Hartwell, who wanted to form a community sustainability partnership around the triple bottom line of sustainability, which is environmental stewardship, economic vitality, and social responsibility. So distinctively, we were practicing sustainable development here in Grand Rapids in earnest here over the last 5-6 year period, but we've had roots that go back to the furniture industry back here in the 1970s. So we've had the ability really to grow sustainability in a very innovative and entrepreneurish way. But the partnership was formed with 5 founding members, Grand Valley State University, Aquinas College, which is a private college, Grand Rapids Community College, which was a community college, and the City of Grand Rapids and the Grand Rapids Public Schools. And it was formed around what should we be teaching in a sustainable development capacity and educating our students on. So that was the roots of that partnership. It crosses over the public sector, private sector, academic sector, service sector. And today we have 193 organizations in Grand Rapids that have signed on to this partnership to progress sustainability.
Can you tell us something about some of the awards and progress you guys have been making in Grand Rapids, Michigan?
We in West Michigan have been told by the U.S. Green Building Council we have the highest percentage of green buildings per capita in the United States. Now, when you say that, we have registered LEED buildings, which are leading environmental and energy design. We have 114 of those just clustered around this West Michigan area. And when you put that against our small population base, which is, again, somewhere in the neighborhood of 200,000 people, you could see that those buildings per capita would be a very significant number. I think we rank somewhere nationally either fourth or fifth in the total number of LEED buildings. Again, that would be against much larger areas such as Seattle and Portland and some of the other areas that have done very significant work in this area. But LEED buildings have really been, I would say, a cutting edge point for us. The other issue, too, is the city now operates, which they have received awards on. The city operates on 20% renewable energy. So those two areas really have forwarded a lot of our thinking in regards to not only being good stewards of the environment, but also how we can use regenerative and restorative and renewal types of materials and resources here in the city and community as well.
Can you tell us about the process of LEED certification?
Yes, LEED certification stands for Leading Environmental and Energy Design. And I would say, from what I've learned in this space, Grand Valley now has 12 LEED certified buildings, and it's a rating process that starts at a basic level of certification. It goes to a next higher standard of silver, going to gold, and then going to platinum. And it's based upon a certain number of points. The point system is basically driven by using the most efficient sources of materials. For example, do you use recycled materials rather than just building out of virgin raw materials? So the question you would ask is, instead of just using wood, could you use things that are composite materials made of recycled wood? Another area, instead of just buying electricity off the grid, is could you actually be operating your building with very energy efficient equipment such as Energy Star, which a lot of us, of course, purchase for our own homes. So then you have Energy Star equipment, and then you would look at, can you generate your own power, which is, I think, one of the major opportunities. Instead of buying things off the grid, now you have the opportunity to buy them in what they call a distributed power generation mode, which means that that building could, in fact, generate its own power by solar, by wind, by geothermal. And those are the kind of technologies that we're using with our buildings here on the Allendale campus. So the more points that you achieve, the higher level of certification. But it is probably the fastest growing area of construction in the United States today, run by the U.S. Green Building Council.
We're speaking with Norman Christopher on Sea Change Radio. He's the Director of Sustainability Development at Grand Valley State University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Your community is making some great strides in terms of organic food and education surrounding nutrition. How successful has that been in reaching the lower income people in the Grand Rapids region?
I would say that if sustainability works at the top of the pyramid, it has to work at the bottom of the pyramid, which means that sustainability can't just be for people in high per capita incomes. It also has to be those that are at the base or what I would call the marginalized part. So we are spending now much more time using sustainability into our neighborhoods, because you can't build sustainable cities without having sustainable neighborhoods. And I think getting to that the child who's 7, 8 years old and showing some of this change, not only just from education, but through experiential learning, we're beginning to see that there are great opportunities. But I see now the ability to inside Grand Rapids where the will to change is at the social level and the focus is at those that are marginalized. So food is one way, but one of the things we are planning on, and I would expect that Grand Rapids would that have, is a very significant urban market. That work had been done and is paralleled off some of the great work that had been done in Milwaukee and other areas where you would have the access to local food, not just through farmers markets, but into a very large centralized area, which would be an urban market downtown. I think that's one way that the access for food will come in. You have to look at universities like Grand Valley. We average today, and it's taken us a while to get there, when we feed roughly 25,000 every day, we're at about 30% local food annualized every day. So that means you have to be taking staple crops from Michigan, food, potatoes, eggs, milk, cheese, besides the seasonal crops that most people recognize Michigan for, like cherries and blueberries and the rest. So I think food is becoming a very significant focus, and it's a way that the not only the students here, but the students in the schools get a chance to appreciate what they eat, where it comes from, and the importance of nutrition. We have a community garden at Grand Valley, not downtown, but on our Allendale campus, and we're bringing school kids out so they can actually participate and grow food so they can see now how important it is.
So Norman, beyond food education and farmers markets, what are some of the areas where you think you can go further in Grand Rapids?
One of the biggest opportunities is through actual taking of local food that is grown here 9 months a year. Now, when you say 9 months a year, you would say that doesn't sound like Michigan, because don't they have a lot of snow? And the answer is yes, we do. What's even more amazing about this is that the 9 month food generation is coming from the Upper Peninsula and through small local organic suppliers. And they're using what we call hoop houses. And hoop houses allow you to grow. It's kind of like a greenhouse, but it's done in a less expensive way. And they can actually, like window panes, you heard of triple pane windows, you can actually do triple hoop houses, which is like a casing over a casing over a casing. And this allows you now to grow crops in Michigan for like 9 months out of a year. So one of the things is we're already taking lettuce and other crops that are grown into our system here beginning in May. We would never be looking at that. So one of the ways is, how do you grow locally? And that's the big shift that I see going on in the marketplace now, is instead of having these large farms, what we're having are small urban farms. You know, it goes into this area of what we call community-supported agriculture, which are known across the United States as CSAs. So if we have a lot of students who have come from farmers or farming backgrounds, they don't want large farms. They want to come out and continue in small farms. So CSAs are actually grown in maybe 6 to 10 acres, but they're done very economically. So there's a different crop rotation that goes in there. And we have a number of CSAs where students and others that are interested and can go buy plots. And so by plots, you get a chance to go purchase from a CSA. You might pay like $400 for the summer, but you go out there once a week and they grow those crops for you, and you can take back that food. Well, now we have people saying, well, wait a minute, instead of me buying it, I'd like to do it. So the shift in farming and the types of farming is well underway.
growing food obviously is pretty energy intensive, and you had mentioned how 20% of Grand Rapids, Michigan's energy is coming from renewable sources. Could you give us a little bit more details on how that occurred and what you're running your grid on right now?
Sure. City of Grand Rapids, with Mayor Hartwell and others, looked at the ability to take a leadership position early on. So I remembered when that charge was given, and that was given in the 2006 timeframe, and it said, gosh, by 2008, I'd like to have 20% of the city's energy run on renewable energy. And, of course, now he's out there with a goal of 100% by 2020. What's really interesting about this is, how did that take place? Well, as we all know, is many of the renewable energies are marginally more expensive. So they are not purchased at the same kilowatt hour rate that the current major petroleum-based sources of power are. However, when you look at what I call sustainable energy, you have to look at it in two capacities. You have to look at it long term, and those prices will come down for new renewable energy, but you have to also include energy efficiency. So one of the ways that the city got into this, they applied at their wastewater treatment plant improvements to reduce the amount of energy they used. So by using different types of impeller blades and different types of diffuser systems where they have so much water passing through, they reduced the cost of that energy. They then took the savings from that from the wastewater energy that they from the plant and invested it into the renewable energy. I see that as a unique model, which gets the benefit of being energy efficient, but also long-term starting the journey towards renewable energy. And that's the kind of model that's working for us here. Cost savings, eco-efficiencies in conjunction with the beginning of the use of renewables, of which wind in Michigan still would be certainly a significant opportunity for all of us here.
Well, it sounds like you have been very vigilant on both the micro and macro level, trying to have your community be one that's it's a lot greener. Norman Christopher, the Director of Sustainability Development at Grand Valley State University, thank you so much for being our guest on Sea Change Radio.
I appreciate it, and I welcome everybody to the sustainability journey.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Maceo Parker, Junior Mervin, Sao George, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Special thanks to Kuva Coffee, Bounty Growing System, and 100 Watt Network. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.